In my trip to West Virginia this week, I usually do a lot of channel surfing on the radio. I do that every time I go back and forth from that. It's an 8-hour trip, so I'm just sort of playing with the radio, listening to different stations. A very interesting thing happens, or some interesting things that you learn on the radio. Number one is, at the low end of the FM scale, there are all these weird, either weird talk stations, or they use really obscure kind of jazz type music or something. You know, those are the stations that are on the low end. You hear like NPR or something. As the numbers get higher in the FM station, you just get sort of your normal music stations. And between here and West Virginia, the further west you get, the greater the numbers of country stations you hear. Okay, and almost to the point of, for every one regular station, you hear a country station. And it's just rather interesting as you kind of get further and further west, the type of music that changes. But I did hear a little interesting factoid as I was channel surfing on the way over there. I don't remember what station it was. It might have been something like NPR, some talk station. They made the comment that more and more people are resorting to eulogies by family and friends on behalf of their loved ones at funerals, in lieu of clergy, in lieu of having any clergy members say any words. And, you know, I've kind of noticed that over the last 10, 15, 20 years or so, more and more people want some of their family or friends to say a few words, or they, at least they give them the opportunity. It's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, sometimes we resort to that because sometimes the sort of ritual things that a clergyman might say sound kind of cold and distant and don't have the personal feel that we want in a funeral. The particular commentator that was talking about this, however, believed that this was happening because fewer and fewer people have any relationship with any kind of clergy. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but my guess is he may be right. Looking at the way society has progressed and the more and more secular we seem to have become, that may very well be the case. And from a standpoint of being a minister, I'm not at all opposed. In fact, I like the idea of having some family or friends say some kind words about the deceased. But I want you to think this morning about what we miss out if we don't have some words that sort of move us beyond that person's life. See, I don't think we need to choose either or. Either we have a clergyman or we have some friends. I believe we can have both and in a funeral setting. But you see, if we don't have somebody there who can elevate our thoughts beyond the life of the deceased, what do we have? We may have some nice words, we may have some nice eulogies, we may have some very good memories of the person that has just died. But where does that leave us with something more? Something that transcends even that person's life? It's interesting to me as we look at this story of Lazarus. Because one of the things I see in the story of Lazarus is kind of the great human drama of sorrow. But there's a deeper story here, and that's the point. There's a deeper story about the glory of the Son of God about to be revealed in His own resurrection right here in this story. This is, I think, the real story of it. But you see, without that story, without this other transcending story of Jesus' resurrection, a funeral is just another life snuffed out. And so let's look at this today and see what we can see and how this moves us beyond just thinking about death and the sorrow that accompanies death. We have here, essentially, the story of Jesus. If you look at chapter 11 and verse 4, Jesus makes a statement about the purpose of the story that is just about to be revealed. He says, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified in it." And you may remember last week when we talked about the blind man. Jesus had a very specific purpose in mind with the blind man. In chapter 9 and verse 3, he says, "This happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him," in the blind man. Jesus knows exactly what he's doing in both of these situations, and he's going to use them to reveal something about God and about himself. Both of them serve a greater purpose. Both of them move our thoughts to something transcendent. Raising Lazarus from the dead will also serve a greater purpose here, even though it will give his family a great sense of joy. You see, in neither case did Jesus necessarily intend for such miracles to occur in every human life. We don't expect that 4 days after we go, we're going to come back to life. That's not the point. We don't necessarily expect that every blind person is going to be healed of his blindness. That's not the point. The point is that Jesus is revealing something about himself that gives us something more. You know, if every human life was to be resurrected immediately, funeral parlors would have gone out of business a long time ago. But they haven't. Jesus invests this story with some supreme significance. And it's the one thing we do not need to leave out of the death of any person. Jesus says in verse 15 to his disciples in John chapter 11, "I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe." Jesus wants them to see something more here. He waited to attend to Lazarus. In verses 3 through 5 and verses 11 through 13, Jesus intentionally doesn't go when he gets word that Lazarus is ill. You know, and it seems almost kind of callous. And there's some interesting dynamic that's going on between him and the family. The sisters all sent a message to him, but he doesn't go. And both of the sisters say when he gets there, you know, if you'd been here, he wouldn't have died. You know, you kind of wonder, were they just sort of, you know, saying, "Jesus, how come you didn't come?" Or were they just saying, well, sort of stating a fact? I think maybe they were a little upset with Jesus. You know, if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. How come you didn't come? They don't say that, but I kind of think that's implied in their statement. How come you didn't show up? Well, Jesus has a greater purpose in mind. He used this occasion to reveal what was going to be ultimately his greatest triumph. The funeral revealed the glory of God and foreshadowed Jesus' own glory. And you'll notice later on in John chapter 12 and verse 32, he even takes it a step further when he says, "When I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself." See, Jesus is moving to a climax here. He's trying to point them to something greater that God really is doing, and that if we grasp that, we really grasp the significance of what Jesus has done in his life. Embedded within this story of Jesus, and I think that's the primary story here, believe it or not, the story of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, that's kind of secondary. Jesus is using this story to reveal something more about himself. But it is the story, first of all, of a sick friend. And you've all experienced this story, haven't you? You've all had sick friends. You've all had sick family members. Notice verse 5 here, very interesting here. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Jesus is close to this family. Probably if there were any one group, at least that we know of, other than the disciples, that Jesus kind of knew intimately, had a sort of close connection with, this would have been them. Would have been this particular family, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Martha is the first one to inform him of Lazarus' illness, to request healing from him. And again, you remember, when he got there, both Mary and Martha said, "Well, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died." Okay, so they asked him to come. They asked for healing. They knew he could do it. During times of illness are times that we more often than not realize we need God. We recognize our human frailty. Our human side is so apparent. We can't often heal ourselves. Doctors do a great job, and I think doctors often are the hand of God to help us. God has given them some insight into what will help heal us. But there's a point where, you know, they can only do so much. I think the more they learn about the human body, the more they realize just how incredibly complex it is. You know, they give you a certain drug, and that drug has interactions with other things that maybe were unintended, and they don't know how to deal with that. But during times of illness, it does remind us of our need for God, doesn't it? And that's when we often pray. Maybe that's the one time it drives us of our need to pray. It certainly is the one time we come and ask for prayers for ourselves or for other people. God is in the business of healing, but sometimes He chooses not to. Jesus chooses to delay His visit here, and Lazarus dies. Now they have to deal with the grief. And let's give Mary and Martha a little bit of a break here. For them to say to Jesus, you know, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. That's coming from a real sense of grief. Okay? We would feel the same way. Do we not wonder sometimes, where is God when, you know, I prayed about this and I didn't get an answer? We feel that way. And maybe that's what's driving their, maybe they're a little angry at Jesus. You know, you're my friend. How come you didn't show up? Well, Jesus has something in mind. They may be asking the question, or we may ask the question in a situation, is all lost at this point? Conversation with Martha. I love this conversation with Martha because we really see a different side of her here than we saw in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. You remember that story? Jesus goes to Martha and Mary and Lazarus' house, and Jesus is sitting and He's teaching, and Mary's sitting right there listening to Him. Where's Martha? She's in the kitchen, and she's making all these preparations. And I kind of wonder, I don't know how many times she came out and just looked out there to see what Mary was doing. And like, she finally comes out and she says, Lord, tell Mary to come in and help me. I got all these things I got to do, and she's sitting here listening to you. And Jesus just says, Martha, Martha, you're worried about so many things. You know, Mary's chosen what's best. Martha appears to be just sort of not really paying attention to spiritual matters. I don't think she's ignoring them at this point, but she's the kind of person who feels the need to take care, to be responsible, to take care of those little practical details of entertaining, little practical details of making the household work from day to day. You know, she's that type of individual who tends to those kind of things. She's aware of them. Mary, she's just another whole personality altogether. And maybe she was ignoring what maybe she should have done, but Jesus sees she's got a mind for doing the right thing. She's got a mind for spiritual matters. Well, guess what? Either Martha does or she learned, because if you look at the conversation she has now, she's the one that shows some genuine maturity in understanding who Jesus is and what He can do. Her faith in Christ has taken on a great deal of hope. Verse 24, she says, I know that He will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. That's a very powerful statement of faith for her to make. And her profession of faith in verse 27, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. That stands beside Peter's in Matthew chapter 16 as one of the most complete confessions of faith in the entire Gospels, in all of the Gospels. She says it exactly the way it's supposed to be said. That's a remarkable statement by a woman that, at least at first appeared, she wasn't all that concerned about spiritual matters. But you see, it's Jesus' statement here in this conversation with Martha that drives the entire episode, that drives who Jesus is, that drives what He's trying to do. I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She says, yeah, I believe that. Yet she and Mary and others, verse 37 also, the crowd asked the same question that Mary and Martha asked. You know, if he had been here, could he not have prevented this one from dying? They had all hoped for, can we even say expected, healing? You know, sometimes we kind of expect things out of God because we seem to think that's what He says He's going to do. Maybe we kind of miss something in there. They all expected, they all were hoping for some healing here. And yet you see, in Jesus' statements and in what He does, He's revealing something even more, something much deeper, something much greater than just this victory over healing, over sickness. He reveals a deeper solution. victory over death itself. I am the resurrection and the life. This is going to be the glory of God and of the Son of God that he speaks of in chapter 11 and verse 4. That he, in fact, is the resurrection and the life. Jesus wants people to believe that. In verse 15, he has told his disciples, "I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe." Just believe in him? They seem to believe that at this point. He wants them to believe and see something even more than that. In verses 25 through 26, he wants her to believe. In verses 40 and 42, he makes similar statements. He says in verse 40, after he tells them to remove the stone, Martha says, "You can't do that. It's going to be a bad odor." He says, Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" See, Jesus is revealing something here about himself, and he wants people to see it. He wants it to be extremely clear. This story points to the greater reality of what he provides, and that is eternal life. Jesus says, "Though he dies, yet shall he live." Sounds like double talk. Though he dies, yet shall he live. But you see, this whole thing, well, he says furthermore, "He shall never die," verse 26. Well, you know, that's already happened, so we know it can't be literally true the way we might think it. I'm just going to live forever. Well, there's a sense in which, yes, I am going to live forever. We can live forever. That's the whole point. Does this not fit with John's purpose in writing this gospel? He says, "These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." That's what he wants. Tell me something. How does that sound in a funeral setting? What else could we have that pierces the grief and the loss that people feel at a funeral setting? Can any eulogy really replace that kind of hope? And again, understand, I'm not against, in fact, I'm for having friends and family say some nice things about the deceased. But if that's all we got, that's not a full, complete story, and it certainly doesn't add any sense of hope. As a result of raising Lazarus, it says in verse 45, "Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him." Now, I don't know about you, but I kind of like to think that some of those same people became Christians later on when the church started. They became followers and believers because they remembered this. It would not be at all it would not be inconsistent with the story and with their lives to think that way. Jesus had done an awful lot of things and wasn't that far from their memory. Remember, he's on his way to Jerusalem here, and the very last week of his life is pretty close. So it's not far away that he will actually die, be resurrected, and that the church will begin within a couple of months or less, maybe less than 2 months. And yet, there's a kind of odd thing that happens here as well with some people. Some people believed. And yet you have this other group. The Pharisees, it says in verse 53, says, "From that day on, they made plans to put him to death." That's really strange, isn't it? You know, here's a guy that just raised somebody from the dead, and you want to kill him. Okay, let me see if I can figure that one out now. Let's see the logic of that. First of all, if he can raise somebody else from the dead, is killing him really going to do the trick? It also says, very interesting here, they also wanted not only to get rid of Jesus, they had to get rid of the evidence. Look at chapter 12, verses 10 and 11. They wanted to get rid of Lazarus as well. Because Lazarus was living proof that this guy was something else, was something more than just another guy. So they wanted to get rid of Jesus because he was a threat to them. They don't stop to even look at this and say, "Wow, that's pretty good." All they can see is he's a threat to their way of life, or what they think is their way of life. Well, you know, they weren't wrong about that in a way. He was a threat to their way of life. Their way of life was the way of lies. Their way of life was the way of power. Their way of life was the way of ignoring God and ignoring what God was doing. So he was, in fact, a threat. But the question we have to ask for ourselves is, well, which group are we in? In a world filled with sickness, death, and grief, do you want the hope that Jesus gives? Would you rather be able to go to, let me back up a little, would you rather have people come to your funeral and know that you believed and had the hope that there was going to be a life after this one? Or you went to a friend or family's funeral and you know that they believed that and that you had hope for them? Man, that's pretty good. You can't replace that. Without Jesus, your passing, you see, might be just another eulogy. It would not have any significance beyond those great words. And I love those great words. I love it when people say good things. But do you want more than that? I do. You can have the assurance of life after the grave. And all those great things that people say about you can be even greater, knowing that you're going to see the person again. And that the person has hope that there's going to be an eternal life after this one. That what you're going through is just like a door into another whole world. A world in which there will be no more death and dying and sickness and sorrow and weeping at people's graves. There will be no more of that. And so we say to each other this morning to remember that. And to stay with the one who is the resurrection and the life. And for our friends and family members who don't know that, we offer to them as well, come to the one who is the resurrection and the life. You want your life to have real significance? You want a life after this one in which you can continue to live and find joy and happiness? Come to the one who can provide it. That's the real story here. Jesus is the resurrection and the life. Let's stand and sing.